Last Thursday we had our over 55s, and after it was finished on Thursday afternoon, I was sitting there thinking to myself that if someone asked me what is the most chaotic, the most rushed, the most busy, the most frantic time of the year as far as ministry is concerned, I would really only have one answer to give: Christmas. And yet as I thought about that, I realised that I, for one, wouldn't want it any other way. Because, you know, Christmas gives those who are believers in the Lord Jesus Christ and the church so many opportunities to share the good news about God, that he loves us, and about his Son who came into the world to show us that love. On Tuesday of this week, I was invited to be over at the primary school next door. The Script Union went in to give their Christmas play. Now, every year, we pay for Script Union to go into that school to present that play. And of course, it was involved in that play, a nativity play. What was most exciting for me this year is to see the children there, and it was obvious they recognised what was happening because they are doing their own nativity play this year, this coming Wednesday night in the church here. At the end of the play, little fella got up and he thanked the Script Union players and he thanked the Baptist Church for making it possible. And afterwards, Andrea, the deputy, because Neil wasn't there, said to me, you know, you've been doing it for a while at the church now. We really appreciate, and I think it's done some good. And I thought, that's Christmas, isn't it? On Thursday, we had our over 55s Christmas dinner. And it was good to have 81. In 81, a group of singers that we had along to dinner. And during the time between the main meal and sweets, we do it very carefully. We have our little devotional time. And we talk just a little bit about the love of God and about Christmas. When I sat up and thought back to that, I thought, well, isn't that great? Those people came to sing to us, sat down and listened. Next year we should look for the most pagan group of singers we can find. I guess that's one side, isn't it, of the busyness of Christmas. But there is another side. And I do admit to looking around during this Christmas month and seeing so many of you fantastic people, and you really are, absolutely up to your ears in ministry at this time, and wishing I could make it a little easier for you. Everything's happening. You look at the hampers, and Jeff and Pat, they have just been so flat out getting those hampers together, and they're not even halfway yet. Hardly started. And people have given, so much of them come in and been given by you people into those hampers so readily. And as well as that, there will be the missionary parcels we've given to, there's the Baptist World Aid, there'll be biscuits and drinks and stuff needed for the carol production. And then we've got the carol production itself. Now, last Thursday night, there were over 30 people here. Over 30 people involved in the play, involved in doing the background, involved in the choir and the singing, and every part of it. We've had Terry here, and he's been here most of this week, just getting the grounds ready, especially ready for Christmas. And then, of course, there's a letterbox drop, and the people who will be, Elaine, organising that. But I know jolly well that the parcels will be there to be distributed about 23, and if anything like last year, they were all going that first morning, people willing to give them. And then there's the special events that each group produces. And I find myself sometimes just praying, Lord, it's so full on at this time of this year. Isn't there an easier way? And I was thinking that last Sunday, and I was talking to Pat and Jeff about the service. And then the Lord showed me the story of the feeding of the 5,000 that we find in Mark's Gospel. If you look at that this morning, and look at this introduction to it, and see what it says. The apostles gathered around Jesus, reported to him all they had done and taught. They'd just been out in the villages, remember? Healing, casting out demons, teaching. Then, because so many people were coming and going that they did not even have a chance to eat, he said to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." So they went away by themselves in a boat to a solitary place, but many who saw them leaving recognized them and ran on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. Not exactly Christmas, because it hadn't been invented at that point, but just as hectic. It was so busy they could not even find time to eat. Does that sound a bit familiar? Some of you who come straight from work to practice on Thursday night, you know what I mean? We got these 12 here, these 12 apostles. They've just done their job well in the village. They've taught, they've preached, they've worked hard. They return for some R&R with Jesus. They want a quiet time. They want to sit down, they want to share and reflect with him. They want to tell him what they've done. They want him to say, "Well done." But it's so busy that they haven't even got time to eat. Thankfully, Jesus is aware of this. He himself knows that they need a break from all the pressure that ongoing contact with people is about. And so he says to them, "Come with me by yourselves to a quiet place and get some rest." It's helpful here for us to understand something from the Greek text. In the Greek text, that word that translated here, quiet place, is the word desert. Doesn't necessarily mean a Sahara type desert or even a Nullarbor type plain. What it actually means, it means an uninhabited or a remote place. And every time it's referred to, it is the same word that is used in the Greek. You look at your English Bibles, we love changing words. And you'll find in your English Bible that they use a different word every time to refer to it. But they don't in the Greek, and they don't for a very good reason. So if you look at verse 31, Jesus says, "Come with me to an uninhabited place." Very important. We go to a place where no one is, then we get some time together. Then in verse 32, the same word is used. So they went away by themselves in a boat to an uninhabited place. The only problem, by the time they got there, it was far from uninhabited. The news of his destination had spread like wildfire. And it was worse than an 18th birthday that had been broadcast over the mobile phone system. Everybody had got there. The scripture tell us that the people had run on foot. I don't know what else they would have run on, but people had run on foot from all the towns and got there ahead of them. So one of these people had nothing to eat. They didn't have time to pack lunch. They heard the news and they got running. They wanted to be there first to get the best seats. So when we read in verse 32, "So they went by themselves in a boat to an uninhabited place," we only have to read the next verse to see there's a sense of irony that accompanies the use of this word here. They went there because it was uninhabited. That's why they went there. But it definitely was not what they found when they got there. You know, I think surprise parties are great for other people. I love organising them. But I do know some people who have had a surprise party and gone away a little disappointed. I know some people who, they've had a big birthday come up and the spouse has said to them, "We're not going to do anything special." Lies through their teeth, you know. "We're just going to go out for a quiet meal to a nice restaurant, just the family and you." They thought, brilliant. But on the way, we've just got to call in to this place to pick something up. You know, this hall or this church or this place. And so they go along quite unsuspecting, looking forward to this nice, quiet dinner together. And they go with them and say, "Would you come in and carry something into this hall?" "Yeah, no worries." They walk in and open the door and there's 100 people there go, "Surprise!" And they're delighted to see so many old friends. But deep down they're thinking, oh, missing out on that little quiet dinner we were going to have. I think that's how those disciples felt. They got there out of the boat, they expected it to be uninhabited, a nice quiet place to be alone with Jesus, and thousands of people waiting there all saying, "Surprise!" You know, Jesus saw it so differently, didn't he? Did you notice that in the reading? When Jesus landed and saw a large crowd, he had compassion on them. The message said he broke his heart. That's what compassion is, a movement of the stomach, basically, a real tearing apart from inside. He had compassion on them because they were like sheep without a shepherd. So he began teaching them many things. Jesus was a great teacher, always was. He saw the crowd needing his teaching, and he couldn't but give it to them. But his aim was not just to teach the crowd. He wanted to teach his disciples too. He wanted to teach them about having a compassionate heart like his. He wanted to teach them about seeing the crowd as sheep without a shepherd. And he wanted to teach them about how they could have provision for ministry by trusting in him. So Jesus was ready when his disciples came to him and said in verse 35 and 36, "This is a remote place." The same Greek word yet again, uninhabited place. This is what we came for. Uninhabited place, look around you. And it's very late. All these people have been here for so long already. Let's make it an uninhabited place again, Jesus. Send the people away. But as I said, Jesus saw things so differently. And he wanted his disciple to see things differently as well. So he turns to them and he basically says to them, don't see the crowds as a burden, but see them as an opportunity to show compassion to them, to visit their lives in a practical way with God's love. I need to know that. And don't you need to know that? Too often I see crowds or groups or even one person as a burden rather than an opportunity. And then he said to them, so you give them something to eat. The disciples' answer is very close to ridiculing Jesus when you look at it. To do that would cost a man's wages for 8 months, a huge amount of money. And what a waste, really. And anyhow, we would have to go miles from here to buy provisions. We actually would have to go to the villages that these people came from. We've got to go there and organise all this stuff. Well, by the time we've done that, they could go home, have a meal, and come back if they wanted to. But Jesus turns to them and really said, I'm not interested in what you don't have. I want to know what you do have. What you have right now, right here. Go and see. And so they went and saw. And after some searching, they came back with 5 loaves and 2 fish. Not very much. But this they gave to Jesus. And look what Jesus did with it. He gave it back to them. Did you notice that? And with it, they gave love and food to 5,000 men, it tells us, plus women and children. He took what they gave to him, gave it back to them, and they could do so much more with it than they ever thought possible. You see, at the beginning, all they wanted was time alone with Jesus. But in the end, they enjoyed a joy-filled ministry that they never, ever forgot. Did you wonder why this miracle is in every one of those 4 Gospels? Because it's the one miracle the disciples were involved in with Jesus. They did the work. They were his hands. They were his feet. They offered his gift of love. I always remember a story Max Lucado tells. He said he had been preaching and teaching for a while, and he was tired and weary. And he was due to go on a plane to yet another place he had to give a conference. And he got on the plane, and he sat on his seat, was right by the window, and there was a seat vacant next to him. And he prayed and said, "Lord, please keep that seat vacant. I don't want to talk to anyone." And people got on the plane and the seat stayed vacant till the very last person who came and sat down. And then he prayed and he said, "Lord, okay, you've given me someone to sit on the seat. Please don't make them a talkative person." And he opened up his laptop, ready to get to work. He thought, if I'm looking while I'm working, they won't talk to me. It didn't work. The lady wanted to talk, and she talked. Max Lucado said, it wasn't long into that journey, she started to tell me her needs. He said, we ended that trip with her, me telling her about Jesus and praying with her. He said, you know something? He said, I didn't have to walk off that plane, I floated off. And he said, I was just so full of joy. I didn't feel weary anymore. I felt exhilarated. I felt that the Lord had, in his wisdom and love and mercy, used me. You know, this Christmas, the Lord has given us a wonderful opportunity as a church and as individuals to visit the lives, friends, family, community, with his love. To feed those who have a need, whether that need's a physical need or a spiritual need. And you know what? We have no great resources to do so. We're not a massive church by any means. We're not a large church. And we're not a wealthy church. And that's why it's important that we put what we do have into his hands. That's why we have this prayer time after the service today. Isn't it? Because we're not going to depend upon us. We're going to spend that little bit of time putting us and our resources back into his hands. I'm sure as I look around, I would find some who are already feeling a little bit weary after a busy year. And I'm sure there will be times for us when it will seem to be all too much. There'll be times when all we want is to be alone with the Master and to let others wear themselves out in ministry if they wish. But you know, the pathway of blessing is this pathway of ministry. As long as it's ministry that he directs us into, not us. And as long as it's ministry we do in his strength and not our own. Now, it's very interesting to me as I read this story that the only result that we actually read about from this amazing miracle is that 5,000 plus people were fed and satisfied, and that the 12 were left with the clean-up job. Did you notice that? You know, that is so true, isn't it, for most of the ministry that we will do as a church this Christmas. We probably will never know the eternal results of the part we play. They don't have great stories of this family coming back to Jesus, or that family coming back to Jesus, or this whole community coming to Jesus because of the feeding of the 5,000. And we probably won't know too much about the results, the eternal results of the part we play. And when everything is done, I can promise you that we will be the ones left with the clean-up. But the blessing of joining Jesus in showing compassion and in showing love and in telling the good news of the gospel, that blessing is energizing. It's irreplaceable. But the biggest thing is, it's eternal.